All right. Welcome everyone to Silicon Subcontinent. Today we have with us Abhinav Das, who is the founder at Orangefoot Labs. Robotics is a deceptively hard field to make progress in, and Abhinav has been at it for the last 5 years. And today we're going to learn more about his experience and what it has been like working at a deep tech company. Welcome, Abhinav. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you so much for having me here.
Awesome. So Abhinav, right before we started, you were talking about how you're in New York right now and you're in the middle of some pretty exciting things. But I want to start off at the beginning of your journey and even sort of before Orangefoot Labs started. What initially drew you to robotics and how did you first get started in the field?
Yeah, I think robotics was my second love. And I started my first company when I was 22 years old. Just straight out of college, very idealistic. And at that time, so basically the company I started was called Evomo, which is in short for Evolving Mobility. And I was very moved by the fact that in India, and or rather most of the developing countries, you do not have good transportation. And one thing which sort of changes transportation is roads. But the second thing which changes transportation is actually having like a truck or a car or something which basically gets you from point A to point B. Now, in India, you have like this thing called the Jugaad, which is like a vehicle which has a pumps engine. And happy to like share some of the videos for the podcast for what we were trying to do back then. And I basically wanted to become a race car engineer for longest of the time. And then, suddenly like this switch happened when I traveled to this place called Bulandshahr. So I grew up in Delhi, very much South Delhi, was in a very nice locality. My father was working in the government. So, we had like a very nice place. Bus used to pick me up. Everything was there. And then, just 50 kilometers outside of, my own silo, I could see that, people are struggling for transportation. So, kids cannot go to school. The farmers cannot really take their produce to the market. And this is back in 2008, when I graduated. So, one of the things like that switch happened, what are you achieving? And I can actually argue it both ways. Like, what do you achieve by making cars go faster when, so much of population is actually not getting any kind of transportation. So the idea there was to actually provide that access rather than, make a performance vehicle. So yeah, it's this kind of switch happened. And then in some time I quit my job back in 2008 only. It was the time of recession. So
yeah,
it wasn't like sort of very difficult for me. Boss was happy to let me go. And yes, I also had like my own inhibitions because there was nobody to tell me like, okay, this is how you pursue it. YouTube had just started in 2005 or 2006. You just had like started, having podcasts or people just explaining their lives was like a very, very new thing. Instagram wasn't there. Facebook had just started. We were just doing Orkut back then. So at that time, there was nobody to tell me that, okay, you know what? You can actually do this on your own. So I had this idea, okay, I'm going to go for a master's and then maybe, explore those resources inside any kind of college which I go to. So I appeared for GATE and, in the middle of like writing GATE, there was like a 3-hour exam. And in the middle of writing GATE, somewhere around 2 hours, there were like 12 questions left. And I was like thinking, okay. Those were the kinds, where you had to make those calculations. I don't remember if I had to use it, if we were given a calculator or not. But then I realized, okay, I'm putting in a lot of brain power in like doing those calculations, those 12 questions. And I was like, okay, why am I doing this? And these are like those moments when, when you have to put in a certain amount of effort, then you realize, okay, it's not worth it probably. And, as an idealist, 22-year-old, at that time, I was like, okay, dude, I can't do this. I'm going to start a company. And I just like sat there, thought about it, scribbled like a plan, came out of the exam, then I thought, okay, you know what, let's find an incubator for my company, and I'm gonna apply for a government grant for building this, because I'd ran out of my own savings after, you know, after the recession, I'd like ran out of most of my savings. So I was like, okay, let me do something and then try to get a grant. And then, yes, I started doing research as well. This Bulandshahr thing happened before the GATE exam. But then after that, I started going to villages more often. And over the next 1.5 years, I was just trying to understand, like, even why would people have to build something like this? I mean, you don't see something similar, you know, in other parts of the world. You not find like a motorized semi-technological vehicle anywhere else. I'm talking about the Jugaad vehicle.
Yeah.
And I covered like almost 5 or 6 states back then, around 100 towns and villages to understand like why this even happens. Found out the person who built this, met the inventor of Jugaad. It just made me sad. You know, it just made me sad that, frankly, you have like so many engineers graduating. And back then, you know, back in 2008, there were almost 300,000 engineers or 200,000 engineers graduating every year. And nobody's looking at that problem. So, it affects so many people. So I sort of saw that gap and, decided, okay, I'm going to build a company and then do this. Then I got into the NID incubator, tried some government grants, which I still haven't got. It's a pretty sad story. I did not know what to look for at that time. Deep tech funding back in 2010, 2011 was really bad. I don't know many people who have done this, but most of the money was actually coming from outside. So, you know, you had to actually be in the Silicon Valley pitch here, and then somebody might just give you like a small seed fund. And for myself, even the whole journey was like, I was very rigid back then that, okay, I'm going to just do it here. You know, I cannot like go somewhere else, spend time, build it somewhere else and then bring it back. So I had like this, idealist 22-year-old person's notion, this idea of the whole world, this is how it's supposed to work. So yes, obviously there were problems, and we worked really, really hard. It took like almost 3 years to build that prototype. I'm gonna send you a couple of videos, how it looked like. And it was just me and a couple of volunteers running the company for we tried doing it for like almost, the company existed like for 5 years. And in 2015, I came to Bay Area for the first time. And that time it was for the Y Combinator interview. I got into that, and then I was told that, okay, and I did not have the right team and a few other things which didn't work out for us. So we didn't get in, but then I understood the kind of ecosystem which Bay Area at the time was, and I could see that this was a place which actually respects innovation a lot more than where I'm coming from. So in hindsight, I should have just moved there like maybe 2 years back, because things used to move a lot faster. And yes, during that time also, I think one of the things which I would like to point out, and in fact, I've said this in another podcast before as well, that, as someone, coming from a, my father was in government service. So it's extremely difficult for, the Indian middle class background people to come out of that comfort zone and start a company. It was extremely difficult. I was the first person in my family to do that. And For me, I just wanted to see like, okay, what worse could happen, there were times when I was homeless. There were times when, I was like living on 50 rupees in Ahmedabad, 50 rupees a day in Ahmedabad, where I was substituting, half of my meals with bananas, because that basically gives you best, calorific bang for buck. And, there were times when we had to like literally think about, okay, do we get dinner or do we buy this part? I have like 500 rupees in in like the totality, like personal, company background, everything. What do we do? So this used to happen. In fact, there were times when there was like a very big article in one of the magazines, and the magazine was costing like 100 rupees. So I had to think, okay, do I buy this for sharing it with on Facebook or something? So, you know, there was like that time where I actually understood a lot of things about, human values. I understood like how do even, you know, people who are running street businesses, how do they survive? How difficult it is, like even that understanding of poverty, that sort of was eye-opening for me, because I've never seen this, right? Like the whole idea of Indian middle class is trying to prevent that from happening for you. Like, what happens if I don't get to eat next day? What happens when I don't have a house next day? So, it sort of became like I think it sort of made me very clear, okay, this is the thing which I want to do. It's not something which can be a deterrent. I get to build my ideas, you know, that's like the best thing which can happen. And we sort of pushed through. And back in 2015 or 14, we had like some trouble with our then investors, which was apparently a government funded thing. So sort of ran into it, and you know, I was like, okay guys, these people are never going to understand, because you know, the incentives are no longer aligned for, you know, the government people. So it may not really make sense. And the people who are taking this decision. So, also back in 2015, when I came back from the Bay Area, I understood that, okay, now it's time to actually move on for me. No matter how much effort I'm putting in, the company is no longer moving. So, I think knowing when to quit is also good. Yes, the problem still exists. It did haunt me for a very long time. I had like sleeping trouble. What I understand now, I was in depression because I was sleeping, you know, once like I took like a consulting thing very close to my house, and then after that, I started like sleeping a lot, and my parents were like, okay, what has happened to you? Even though I was like really comfortable, but inside I wasn't comfortable because, I wasn't like building what I had to build. Yeah. So this happened. And and then after that, I was trying to work on a few other ideas. I actually started to learn how to code, because I'm a mechanical engineer, you know, hated the fact that why do like IT people are getting most of the attention all my life. You know, if you would have asked me back in 2014, would you ever learn how to like maybe use a Arduino? I would have said like, okay, I don't want to learn this. And, but then, you know, I started doing it, when I got back home to Delhi. And I was in NID Ahmedabad at the time, throughout my, times in Evomo. Right. And and then I got back home, back in Delhi with my parents. And that time I started like tinkering with electronics, tinkering with, learning how to code a little bit. I'm definitely not someone who, as like someone who is in CS, but I understand, I basically worked enough to like understand it as much as I can. So, basically my parents were building a house somewhere. They were considering building a house somewhere. So I took, we basically had like a land in like a semi-rural kind of a area in Faridabad. That's like a city right next to Delhi. And the condition was not really good, but I had like 1,000 square feet of basement space, which I got. So sort of convinced my parents, I'm not sure if they're going to see it, but yeah, sort of, convinced my parents, okay, you know what, like we should build a house here. We'll have like a much larger space, and I'll dog get to, run around the house. And they were like, yeah, makes sense. in hindsight, okay, so we got like a really big space there, and that's where, we started building things. So one of the ideas that back then we were trying out was to build like an electric vehicle, and we had to find that electric vehicle. So we thought, okay, and then my co-founders were also there, Aditya and Akash. And Aditya is a furniture designer. I think that takes us to the last question. You know, one of the questions, how did we meet?
Yeah.
So Aditya was my roommate back at NID, and Akash basically worked at, from the investor side. He was at the IIM Ahmedabad. He was a student first, and then he joined this IIM Ahmedabad incubator, and they had funded us. And Akash, basically, that's the time when we sort of got to know each other. And we used to have like these long discussions over, okay, what is the state of technology? And I think with all three of us, this idea that, you know, that the problem with status quo was sort of, sort of the thing which inspired us to build what we are building now. So, yeah. So one of the ideas which we were working on, which we thought, So one of the things which we tried, started doing was to basically research on the kind of electric vehicles which were available in Delhi and, surrounding areas. Most of them were e-rickshaws, which we hated, especially coming from like a design background. And, you know, me being a mechanical engineer, the kind of structural things it has, that really stung. So I really wanted to change that. There was a time I would like, if I would see an e-rickshaw on the road, I would just like turn my head. It's like a really bad design. So that was something which I wanted to build, but I understood that it requires somewhere on, 15 lakh rupees to sort of get it certified. And at that time we were doing some projects, we had like 1.5 lakh rupees. So one of the stopgap things was, what about we start building furniture? Aditya at that time was working in a company in Delhi. They were doing like high-end furniture, and he's a furniture designer, mechanical engineer and a furniture designer as well, from NID. And that's where we met. And he was working in this, high-end place where they used to make designer furniture. And then he used to say that, okay, there is so much of inefficiency in the system. Just for making smaller pieces, they would take like 3 months. Wow. So... yeah. And okay, I'll get to that. So this is like a market which has so much of inefficiency, and, you know, me being from the automotive background, automotive R&D background, I was like pretty sure, okay, there could be a just-in-time system, because like for cars you have, which are like super complicated, so many parts. Obviously, it makes sense because you have like the only one kind of car which is getting built in thousands of numbers, versus furniture could be like just every piece could be different. Mm-hmm. But even in spite of that, it should not be taking this long. Yeah. So that's what we started thinking about. And we saw that, okay, there are like these open source CNC machines which people are building. And, that's where we saw an opportunity.
So what does CNC mean?
CNC is computer numeric control. Imagine a 3D printer, but instead of printing, it cuts pieces of wood. Or if you see a lot of objects around your house, a lot of things would have been built on a CNC machine now. So, it's a very popular thing industrially, but not, still not like has reached that ubiquity that, every machine shop is using them. So it's kind of like getting there. So so we built like a CNC machine in our parents' basement. We thought, we have all the instructions. It's an open source project. We should take like, and I build a truck. Who else can do that? So, I used to say, I don't know how many people in the world could say this, that I've built a truck before.
Yeah, so, probably Elon Musk.
Yeah, so that was, but then we ended up like spending, I think, double the amount of money which we had. And for that 15-day initial project, we took more than 5 months. But when we did, we started cutting our own furniture in our parents' basement.
Nice.
So that was where it started. The Orange Wood Labs basically started. And even the story about Orange Wood is that later on we got to know that there's a place in LA which is called Orange Wood.
I think that worked pretty well for you.
Yeah, but then at that time, so my dog's name is Purple, and we couldn't get anything with Purple. So we were like, okay, what is the next best thing? And it was like so random, you know, with, like within a minute, we were like, okay, we are naming it Orangewood. And then we just bought the domain. So that's how it happened. That's what the story behind the name is. I encourage people not to do it. Please don't.
Another thing that, you know, you mentioned, and this is maybe important for a lot of our listeners who would be listening to this. People don't, they always see the end result that, oh, this person has founded this startup. They are funded by this, you know, YC in your case, which is obviously a well-known VC firm. But people don't see the struggle. And sort of some of the struggles that you talked about, you know, being homeless even for some time, being an impression for quite a while, and then, you know, sort of making through it. I think thank you for your account. For your candor, I think, on that end. And I think it's important for everyone to understand.
Yeah. I'm not like eligible for arranged marriages in India, so it's fine. Yeah, I mean, it's just sad, right? Like, people just don't see that. It's like they're like everyone is trying to push you towards mediocrity. And, you know, like the higher end of mediocrity is like become an investment banker. Now suddenly becoming a VC is like the coolest thing. So everyone is trying to become a VC before like even trying to be early in like a startup. So it's just like, I just don't understand this. I don't get this. Without like, and frankly, the whole education system is trying to save you from these things. They're trying to save you from being homeless or, you know, being going hungry or probably like calling up your friends, five of your friends, dude, I need to take a shower in your house every second day. But then, you know, it's a life experience. I mean, there are times when I started believing in, you know, things which are not logical at all. There are times when I would, I remember this, and specifically if you know, that particular professor is seeing this. So one of my friends was at IIM Ahmedabad, and he was doing a PhD. And that time I was like struggling to pay the rent. It was only 2,500, but you know, I was like literally out of money all the time trying to build the truck. And there was this time when one of, like, he basically wrote like a case study on us, and that got selected. He got paid something, and then he said, dude, I just want to give it to you. I was like, yeah, fine. That's like 2 months of rent. So and then, you know, suddenly I was just invited to IIM Ahmedabad by this professor who wanted to just talk to me and, you know, just listen to me. And then after that, he just handed me like 10,000 rupees, and he wouldn't now reply to my emails. So yeah, I mean, yes, obviously you'll find like, you know, you'll find like a lot of assholes, but yeah, there's like 10% of humanity still left who would just like help you out. So that's like the good thing about this. And I think one of the things which I believe what I was able to personally do was to inspire some of these people who were like, you know, wanted to always build this thing. And I feel very privileged, and, you know, I'm actually thankful for my own journey that I could actually do that. So it's pretty cool.
That's awesome. And I think, so you spoke a little bit about Orangewood Labs, and obviously your mission is to build robots that help all businesses get access to automation. And you went through YC, you took your company, went through YC. Tell us a little bit more about your YC experience. It is of course an exclusive accelerator for a lot of companies, for a lot of early stage companies. And so tell us how your experience was. And there's also been, you know, some news about how the YC experience has changed over the years. It used to be a lot more personal, a lot more, you would speak with, for example, Paul Graham, right? In an earlier cohort, 2012 batch of YC was probably looked a lot different from today's batch of YC. So tell us a little bit about your experience, and maybe tell us how you contrast your experience with like earlier experiences or later experiences, if you know of any.
Absolutely. So I think I'll just start with where we left off. So so we built this this website for showing our furniture, and then nobody came to our website. There were like 150 users on the website, and then one of them was someone who was building a co-working space. So that basically led to taking our services. Then one, like he basically took like one floor in that building, then the second one, and then there was another project. So within these three projects, we actually became profitable as like a, you know, three people company, just doing everything on our own in my parents' basement, just started like churning money. And then YC happened. So at that time we were thinking, okay, you know, we might like become maybe a company which maybe are Delhi's biggest furniture manufacturer. That's what we were thinking. And then even though I'm like someone who actually thinks of scale, but then that's sort of how we were thinking at that time. And then YC happened. And then, you know, the first meeting we had with Tim Brady, he basically asked us like, okay, why don't you want to build it for the whole world? And I think that sort of changed, you know, our way of thinking. The only difference, I think, what I find in mostly US startups versus, you know, the Indian companies, or not even startups. I mean, we were like functioning as a small business. We were not even thinking of scale at that time. But it happened in a way that what they made me realize that those 15 minutes that what if you start thinking of scale, the risk is actually the same. But yes, you have to just do things differently. So that sort of changed our attitude towards scale. And that was, I think, the biggest takeaway from, you know, from going to YC. Another thing which I understood from the rest of our batch, and we had like a physical batch, unlike now. In fact, if you ask me, most people at YC preferred that. Back in our time, I think till summer of 2018, they used to fly everyone to Mountain View for the interviews. So, and you know, I could like thank YC for getting my first Bay Area experience because I didn't have the money to pay for the tickets or anything. So at that time, they used to do that. Now it's obviously because they have scaled so much. And in terms of experience, I think it will be there. Like, obviously, you know, if you're doing it online versus in person, there's obviously a difference. Obviously, the batch size is huge now. Like in our time, it was 150. Now it's double. And even 150 was a lot, like for even for YC. It's like they are like trying to scale it up as just like any other startup. It's obviously broken for a lot of things. But then I think it's the vibe which sort of gives you that thing. And okay, another thing which is very interesting, like Michael Siebel in real person, you know, in person versus Michael Siebel on YouTube, it's actually the same. But it's just that, you know, the impact is obvious so much. Yeah, it's... you know, it's like if you see someone in flesh, you just think, okay, this is a normal dude. I'll probably be hanging out with him, right? So, you know, you don't get inspired by someone who probably you see on TV. You get inspired by people who you are probably, you know, they are probably hanging out at the same pub or, you know, in our case, like the Chai Thela in India. If you know, okay, that third person who probably comes there for chai, you know, has done something so awesome, you'll get inspired by them. And then you'll think that, okay, you know, if they can do it, I can also do it. It's sort of a, I mean, that's sort of a thing which I think drives humans a lot.
Totally, yeah.
And yeah, in terms of experience, I think it will get there. I have like total belief in, you know, how the YC has been running itself. Now, in terms for hardware, I think they need to obviously do some more work. There was a back in 2018, we tried to push them to like have their own maker space in Mountain View, which did not happen. Right. Yeah, so I think there are like obviously a few things which they can do. But then if you see the kind of hard things which they are doing, there are a lot more biotech companies now than, you know, even the hardware companies. So that's actually I'm pretty excited about what they're building. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool to hear. So jumping off of that, tell us a little bit more about your experience, how you went from this furniture design, furniture manufacturing company to what you are today.
Yeah, so where we, like, after the YC demo day, we went back home, back in India.
You were still a furniture company by the demo day? Still, okay.
Yeah, we were still a furniture company, though we had already started working with robotic arms back then. Okay. And why we started working on robotic arms was the fact that, you know, our spray paint guy wouldn't show up. So we'll basically cut the pieces of furniture, cut the pieces of wood very, very precisely in like, within a few hours. Like for a whole co-working space, we could actually do it in a day, in like less than, 12 hours. But then the paint guy wouldn't show up. And I'm talking about Noida. So we started like talking about it to other industry, other people in the industry also, other factory owners. And they had like the same experience. They were like, okay, painting, because it's one, it's highly skilled. You need to have a very steady hand for doing it. And nobody with just like a few, you need like more than a few years experience. That's why they are, they are short. The demand is very high for them and they are short in supply. There are not enough people doing this. Secondly, it's also very, it's not good for health. Mostly people are not taking care of, wearing like those masks, and I'm talking pre-COVID. So it was also not like, people who do this, they also know that it's not, helpful for them in the long run. So that's why this has become very rare. Painting skills were becoming rare. And then, we were like kind of getting pissed off after a while, like, the pieces of wood were just kept there, and we had promised a customer because we knew that it can be done in like 2 days, but then it was taking so long. So that was the time when we decided, okay, let's build a robot for this. We have already made a CNC machine. You just have to, put these stepper motors in a such a way that it can do like a, back and forth kind of a motion. This was just for 2D, like flat pieces of furniture. So we were building that. And it was pretty cheap. So when we just looked at the alternatives, we were basically building at 1/25th the cost. So it wasn't making any sense to us. Like, why do these, similar things are so costly? So there were like few things. There were few components which were very, very expensive for those expensive robots. And me, coming from that background where I've actually built like a, $2,000 truck, it was sort of a new technical challenge. By the time we were also not like very happy with the way, the customers wouldn't really pay. So in India, there can be like 180 days payment cycles also. And it wasn't like making that much sense, even though we were profitable, but then it wasn't making sense in on an IRR perspective. So what we started doing was, and I had like this idea, this theory that, okay, what if we use low cost components and then we use a machine learning algorithm, which basically makes them more accurate. So that was the idea which we started working on back in October of 2018. We hired our first machine learning engine. And then within a few months, we were getting like a very precise, very low cost robot. And in January 2019, we thought, okay, this is a good time to pivot. Now let's do it. So, but yes, at that time also, we ran out of money. So it was extremely hard. We had like a 35 people team because furniture sort of required that kind of operational team. And we had to let go of a lot of people. It was extremely painful for all of us. At that time, even Aditya's father died at that time. And then, I thought, after YC, it would never happen. Then I'll have to be worried about, okay, eating, about food or, having like a, having a roof over my head. Back in 2019, all those things happened again. So me and Akash, we were in San Francisco, and our bank accounts was empty. Like, our credit card was maxed out, the company credit card. And obviously in US, you're like, your credit card was like, okay, $20,000, and it's like already maxed out. So we were really literally struggling for food. And then there would be times when, I would again like go back into my 2012, 2013 days where I'll try to save energy, you know, try to sleep more. And it was getting like so crazy for us. There were times when we were basically trying to hustle. And I think Akash is one person who's like much better than me in hustling. So, there would be times when I would just come back from a meeting and then, you know, I would find the fridge full because he basically just, helped out he would just maybe blackmail a relative that, okay, please send me $200 and, you know, the fridge would be just full. And then he would tell me like one of the most important things. One of the most important things from which I've learned from him and also throughout my life is the way you need to start thinking with abundance. And I think that's a very American way of thinking about things. We are like throughout our lives told like, okay, don't udo mat, ya fir, kya chadar se jyada pair nahi hone chahiye lambe. And you know, but like chadar kyun nahi lambi ho sakti. So that's where the American thinking comes in. And that was one thing which I would never never forget. Because when you start thinking from an abundance point of view, things change for you somehow. And that's what happened. Like we met like almost 120 investors back in 2019. We got like so many no's. I thought, okay, once you are done YC, it's like a golden ticket and, you know, you'll never have to like be poor again and whatever. But then that is never really the case. You could actually go back into this because you have so many liabilities, then it doesn't like always works out. So we were having such a hard time. And then suddenly, you know, Akash sort of reached out to like 1,000 people on LinkedIn. He just like kept doing it again and again, again and again. And then one of them was an IP lawyer. So we did not want to like talk to anyone who was, we already had, an IP lawyer who was ready to take, who was basically doing on a deferred basis for us, all the work on a deferred basis. And we did not need one, but then, you know, we just thought, okay, let's just go and talk to him. He sort of convinced me, dude, we have to go. He also invests sometimes. And then we did. That was, I think, our 116 or 117th meeting or a call at that time. And I had no clue. And, you know, throughout the meeting, we just explained them the technology. And the idea was, okay, we might sign them up as a IP, for IP. And which we had no money for, by the way. They are probably one of the most expensive ones. And then I was like, okay. And we were just like running out of money. Our sublease, which got expired. In fact, there was a very friendly Pakistani guy who, you know, sort of let us live in his house in San Francisco. So kudos to him, you know. we found like all the food. We basically finished all his masalas and rice over, I think, the 20 days we lived there. And after that, we, you know, just came. So we came to our relatives' places where we could just live for a longer time. After that, after like maybe 10 days, I got an email from the same IP lawyer I know you guys are at this particular valuation. You raised at this much money. Can I get the same allocation? I was like, okay, wow. So basically we got like a new investor on board. And, given my experience, like I've spent like throughout this 12 years, I've spent so much time running after investors. I think that could not have happened anywhere else in the world. So
what do you mean by that?
It makes a lot of sense.
Come again?
So what do you mean? So you said that you...
Yeah, basically he invested in the company. So, okay. Yeah. So because we were getting so many no's because he was himself was very much interested in, you know, the whole technology, he basically went into it in a way which nobody else would. So you know, he just like, okay, let me invest. And at that time, you know, we were also not valuing ourselves at a very high. We were also thinking of taking like a down round, which we didn't end up taking because nobody was giving it to us also. But, you know, this guy who's like super technical, very known in his field, just comes and tells you, okay, guys, can I get the same allocation? Or can I get at the same valuation which you guys raised previously? So it sort of changed the way we, you know, we were perceiving. Because, you know, humans basically constantly need some kind of validation. We were sort of falling prey to it, but then not realizing our technology is actually great. What we are building is actually going to change the world. And we sort of forgot that, but, you know, because of this external validation, something happened, and then we sort of got back into the game. We sort of restarted the company. It was not enough, but it was enough to sort of keep going and building the next version of the product.
Okay.
Yeah. So after mid of 2019, I came back to India and we started working on it. Obviously, it's hardware, so took so much longer again.
It's called hard for a reason.
Yeah, and again, you know, then it comes back to it. Okay, you do have very good engineers, but then the whole ecosystem is not as supportive. So even like getting anything manufactured, it actually takes longer sometimes to even longer than US. So I'm actually surprised to see the kind of timelines which a US manufacturing company gives you, even for PCBs or for CNC machine parts or anything which you want to get fabricated versus what happens in India. In India, it can take like really long sometimes. So
I have a couple of quick questions here. So one is on the timeline. So YC happened in 2018.
Yeah.
And you were still in SF around the beginning of 2019. So
no, I came back to India in 2018 after the demo day. We had raised like some money after that. It wasn't okay. It wasn't like even the average amount of money raised by any YC company. But then we wanted to keep it as such because our, like on paper, our business was profitable, unlike a lot of other companies. So we didn't have to like dilute too much.
So you went back to India after raising on demo day. So the R&D was happening in India, and then what made you come back to SF in 2019?
It was mostly for fundraising, and also we wanted to set up back in 2019 itself.
What do you mean by setup?
So for us, it makes a lot more sense. For every robot we sell in India versus USA, we make like a lot more money there. So in the US. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. And secondly, I guess that answers my question because I was just confused about the situation between the India. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Yeah. Please. What we were talking about.
Yeah. Basically, we came for fundraising first, and then second, obviously, was to set up. And then we went back in 2009, mid of 2019, started working on the second version. We actually made quite some progress within a few months, but then there were a lot more problems. And after that, so I was coming back for the 2020 demo day in March. Okay. And this is like just before the Corona thing, which happened. And so YC was about to have a demo day, and then suddenly everything had to be like, they moved everything remote only. So, and then I got stuck as well. One of the things which we did during the pandemic was the fact that, okay, so we did not have any robotics engineers to begin with. We didn't have people who have worked on robotic projects, but then even in terms of where the software needs to be, back in 2020, we were not there. So during the pandemic, we actually took time to train ourselves for these things. And yes, money was obviously a little tight. We sort of pulled it through because one of our co-founders basically started doing a side gig and then started paying for everything, so that sort of also helped till this point. And then after that we also like started raising again, so things are like much better now.
That's very cool. That's so much to unpack there. But yeah, so I guess where is Orangewood Labs headed in the next 5 years or 10 years?
Yeah, absolutely. So, one of the things which I was able to sort of understand from the whole journey throughout, that the fact that if somebody has to use their brains and hands to build it, at least the hand part we should be able to automate in some way, because it's a lot of effort. So I'll probably show you my previous Evomos prototype, and that basically is made entirely of steel tubes. The whole chassis was made out of steel tubes. 90% of it is welded by me. So it's a lot of work, and especially for, I think, Indian engineers, we don't really build things with our hands. We're not as good as, let's say, people in US, where some of them have their own garages because their parents are trying to build furniture or something in their garage, and they have like that kind of training to begin with. Or even in school, they are taught a lot of these vocational things. But then for us, there was a learning curve there. And but then it took so long for me, like for doing certain things. I wish I had automation before. And frankly, if I talk to any factory owner or anyone who's trying to build something, they wish they could do with some help. And so what I believe is that, since the 60s, computers have changed humanity in certain ways. Earlier, banks used to be full of people just going through registers, and there was no way to confirm things. Like I read somewhere that if credit cards have existed like since 1950s, and people used to call up to confirm, like, okay, is this a legit card? So we've come a very, very, very long way because of computers becoming more accessible. So because computers became more accessible, a lot more people could program it and then build more things on top. Like back in what, 1980s, there was nothing called fintech. What was fintech, right? Like these are the new industries which are like much bigger than maybe the oil industry now. So what we believe at Orangewood is the fact that, what if you give a computer a hand? What if a computer has a hand? That's how we see a robotic arm, where if you have something which needs to be automated, you could actually program it. And if you have more of these in the world, you'll have a lot more people who could program on top of it. So our idea is to make it more accessible for people. So world is now changed by things like Arduino or Raspberry Pi. Who would have thought about it, right? Just started like a college project where just to like Arduino started just because they wanted to do some art projects, right? So but then that just changed the way the world we live in now. There's so many devices. You're practically everything is a computer now. So I think that's what needs to happen to robotic arms also, and that's what we're trying to build.
That's awesome. That's super incredible. So I guess on a last note, what would be your advice, just a few words of advice for all the students, for example, who are in high school, who are in college, or who are in college, who are looking to build out their own ventures in India, or thinking about coming to America and building a venture out, but also want to contribute back to India. What would you say to them?
Yeah, I think just don't limit yourself to anything. I think we tend to limit ourselves too much, and it's a very Indian thing because of our past and everything. I mean, being a colonized country, all those things are sort of extremely difficult to get out of. I was able to understand it like better once I came to US, because a lot of people here who are like born here, they don't have these kind of hangups, and that sort of changes the way they look at the world. I think we tend to limit ourselves too much. So my advice is just to keep building. Like that's what, like keep building. It's okay. I mean, just spend a lot of money, just go for it, build things. Yeah, that I mean, don't restrict yourself. That's what I'll say. I have restricted myself too much. There were a lot of times when I have tried to play safe and it has backfired.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Abhinav. This was amazing. We really appreciate you coming out and speaking with us. This was amazing.
Yeah, thank you so much, guys. And good luck. Happy to help out in any way possible. And let me know, like, how I can be involved.
Of course. Thank you.
Thank you, Abhinav.
Yeah.